Last month's trading frenzy in hot stocks like GameStop is under scrutiny. We'll have more on the questions lawmakers are asking. And Democrats are taking different tacks to enact immigration reform, but they're facing tough odds in Congress.
Republicans, I think, are pretty deeply antagonistic toward Biden's approach. I think they feel like this plan looks like a Democratic wish list and moves even further from sort of the compromises that they've been able to strike with Democrats in the past.
Plus, perseverance pays off as NASA's latest Mars rover touches down on the red planet. It's Thursday, February 18th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertulli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Lawmakers from the House Financial Services Committee grilled top executives at Robinhood and hedge fund Citadel today, who played a role in last month's GameStop trading frenzy. In his opening testimony, Robinhood co-founder Vlad Tenev apologized to customers for restricting their ability to buy shares of GameStop and other hot stocks in late January.
Despite the unprecedented market conditions in January, at the end of the day, what happened is unacceptable to us. To our customers, I'm sorry and I apologize. Please know that we are doing everything we can to make sure this won't happen again.
Our markets reporter Gunjan Banerjee has more on today's hearing.
One of the core issues during this hearing has been the topic of payment for order flow, which has already been very controversial. In payment for order flow, trading firms pay retail brokerages to execute retail investors' orders. There have been some testy exchanges today between lawmakers and these executives, and particularly one where a congressman repeatedly asked Citadel's Ken Griffin on whether Robinhood customers get worse execution on their trades than those at Fidelity.
When asked about the practice later during the hearing, Griffin stressed the benefits of the practice, calling it, quote, a major source of innovation in the industry. For our full coverage of the hearing, head to WSJ.com or the WSJ app. Nearly 500,000 customers in Texas are still without power, according to PowerOutage.us, after an unusual winter storm disrupted the electric grid and power lines earlier this week. Power has been restored to over 2 million customers since Wednesday. Millions of Texans are also being told to boil water before using it after pipes froze and burst from the cold. Meanwhile, Republican Senator Ted Cruz, who's faced widespread criticism for going on a family vacation to Cancun during the emergency, said he'd fly back from Mexico immediately. In a statement today, he said he was accompanying his daughters on an impromptu trip. Walmart says it's raising wages for about 425,000 employees, up to an average above $15 an hour. The minimum starting wage for U.S. workers will remain at $11 an hour. The announcement from the nation's largest private employer comes after Walmart posted strong holiday sales. Walmart's overall sales rose 8.6% in the fourth quarter, and e-commerce sales, which include online grocery orders, jumped 69% year over year. Unemployment claims are up again, reversing a recent downward trend. New applications for jobless benefits rose to 861,000 last week, according to the Labor Department. Claims have been well above the pre-pandemic peak of 695,000 since last March. Observers are hopeful federal aid and lifting restrictions in some states could help boost the U.S. job market. And investigators from the World Health Organization looking into the origins of the coronavirus are now focusing on two animals, ferret badgers and rabbits, that they say could have played a role in transmitting the virus to humans. Both were sold at the Wuhan market in China, where many early cases of the virus emerged. The team says more investigation into the suppliers of the animals is needed. Coming up after the break, how Democrats are hoping to push immigration reform through Congress.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. Oracle.com/Wall Street.
Immigration reform is a major focus of the Biden administration. But a broad bill supported by the president and introduced in Congress today is likely to face an uphill battle. Democrats are now looking at various strategies like breaking up the legislation into smaller pieces to get parts of their plan through. Joining me now is our immigration policy reporter, Michelle Hackman. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Michelle, let's start with President Biden's immigration bill, which would provide a pathway to citizenship for 11 million immigrants. Can you tell us more details about that aspect of the plan for the young immigrants known as Dreamers?
The Biden plan creates a basically 8-year path to citizenship where they get a green card after 5 years, become citizens after 3 more, and creates a sort of expedited pathway for the Dreamers, who you asked about. The Dreamers are, generally speaking, a population of young immigrants, you know, in the country without authorization, typically brought here as children with their families illegally, or overstayed a visa. And for that population and a couple of others, you know, immigrant farm workers, people here from some designated war-torn countries, the pathway to citizenship would be even faster. So they could qualify for a green card immediately, that's permanent residency, and become citizens in about 3 years.
Now, Biden's overall plan, which is considered more of a wish list right now, differs considerably from his predecessors, especially in his approach to the border. We reported this week that the number of families illegally crossing the U.S.-Mexico border has risen to pre-pandemic levels. How is the Biden administration handling the increase?
I would say that's sort of separate from their immigration plan that they've sent to Congress. That's sort of a top-to-bottom update or revisioning of the immigration system that's further left, I would say, probably than even where the Obama administration would have landed. And I think that that's partially in response to how the Trump administration handled the border. But interestingly, in their day-to-day handling of the border, the Biden administration has gotten rid of some of the Trump administration's most prominent policies. For example, the zero tolerance policy that led to family separations at the border, they formally rescinded. They ended a program called Remain in Mexico. But in reality, they actually weren't relying on those programs. And they've left a couple programs in place that have essentially kept the border shut to almost all asylum seekers because they are afraid, like the Trump administration was, of having sort of large numbers of migrants crossing the border illegally and that, you know, creating a sort of humanitarian crisis at the border. And so you see them taking a harder line than their rhetoric might lead you to believe.
What can you tell us about Biden's approach to former President Trump's ban on H-1B visas for foreign workers? Businesses have been really concerned about Biden's approach here and the details.
Yeah, this is really interesting. You know, I think most people actually don't realize that last year, you know, right around the beginning of the pandemic, the Trump administration formally banned nearly all forms of immigration, legal immigration to the U.S. So, you know, that includes foreign temporary workers, that includes folks who are coming here, you know, on H-1B visas, foreign executives moving here, even family members of U.S. citizens. And the Biden administration, interestingly, hasn't really said a word about that ban. And it's become, you know, a bigger and bigger controversy because people are really, you know, businesses are hurting, families are hurting. And the Biden administration has given no indication that it intends to lift the ban. Now, it's set to expire at the end of March. And so it's possible that we could just see the Biden administration leave it in place. You know, I think that they feel like they don't want to do anything that would counter their message around trying to do everything they can to help people out during the pandemic. And, you know, the Trump administration talked about this as a way to keep foreign workers out from taking American jobs. And so the Biden administration could just let that expire quietly, in which case it would go away in, you know, a month and a half or so.
So historically, it's been very challenging to reach consensus on immigration reform. And to that end, Democrats are pursuing a couple of different strategies at once here to enact their policies. How exactly are they going about that? Which pieces of Biden's plan are they carving out into pieces in the hopes of passing them separately?
They've just introduced this comprehensive, in their eyes, immigration plan. But I think they realize, you know, it would take 60 votes in the Senate to pass that. They've only got 50 Democratic votes. I think they would win probably zero Republican votes for the plan as it stands now without any sort of concessions. But they are looking at a few different ways. You know, White House officials are privately referring to this as a multiple trains leaving the station type approach. So They're looking at bills that they passed last year through the House. So that would be the DREAM Act, you know, to help out those young immigrants. That would be a bill to help out farm workers, to give them a path to legalization. That's about another million people. They're also separately looking at using, you know, this budget maneuver reconciliation that they're using to pass their COVID relief package now. They're looking at doing a second package, you know, based around infrastructure, but doing sort of a legalization pathway through that bill, which would only take 50 votes to pass. And that, I think, is emerging as maybe one of the likelier pathways, because it would make it possible to do some kind of immigration reform without Republican votes.
To that end, which parts of the plan are facing the most opposition right now?
I would say most of them. You know, Republicans, I think, are pretty deeply antagonistic toward Biden's approach. I think they feel like this plan looks like a Democratic wish list and moves even further from sort of the compromises that they've been able to strike with Democrats in the past. And they feel like, you know, Biden's approach on immigration policy, reversing, as I mentioned, several of, you know, President Trump's major immigration initiatives, they feel like is going to exacerbate any kind of coming crisis. And so they, I think, are feeling even less inclined for that reason to work with Democrats on some kind of reform package.
You know, overall, Michelle, very different approaches here to immigration between former President Trump and President Biden. What are some of the things you're looking at going forward now?
Yeah, I think that the goals and the rhetoric that you're seeing out of the Biden administration are very different from the Trump administration, in the sense that Trump was really focused on making America sort of a less attractive place for migrants to come to. You know, they talked about our asylum system in particular being a magnet for migration, and they wanted to sort of eliminate that magnet. The Biden administration actually is more focused on making it more attractive for would-be migrants to stay in their own countries. And so in the proposed package we saw today, there's about $4 billion proposed in aid to Central American countries to ease some of those factors. You know, people are running away from, you know, really deep poverty, from endemic corruption, and that money is sort of aimed at trying to alleviate those factors. And I think even outside of the bill, you'll see the Biden administration try to work with those countries to ease some of those factors.
Wall Street Journal immigration policy reporter Michelle Hackman. Michelle, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And finally,
touchdown confirmed. Perseverance safely on the surface of Mars, ready to begin seeking the sands of past life.
That sound from NASA's Mission Control Room in Pasadena, California, just as its Perseverance rover landed on Mars. The SUV-sized vehicle reached the planet's surface this afternoon, right on schedule at 3:55 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The lander endured what NASA engineers call 7 minutes of terror, a period when mission controllers had no contact with the lander as it descended toward a target zone that's the smallest NASA has ever attempted to hit. NASA hopes Perseverance will find evidence of past life on the red planet. If all goes well, the rover will collect rock and soil samples and bring them back to Earth for analysis by 2031. And the rover will have some company, a tiny robotic helicopter named Ingenuity that made the trip with it. It's the first helicopter to be sent to another world, and NASA plans to use it to conduct the first powered, controlled flights on another planet. For more on today's landing and NASA's history of exploration on Mars, you can visit WSJ.com. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.